a summary of episodes 23 to 32 with Dave Henson. Well, always a pleasure. Nick and Giles English was a Bremont special. What was your overview thoughts of that one?
So my, like, the standout thought from listening to the Nick and Giles episode was just how nice they are. Like, throughout their entire podcast, the one word which stood out through the entire thing is the word support. So they're supporting each other, supporting their family through, like, a pretty immense family tragedy. Not just on one occasion, but again afterwards. And into their business of making watches and their approach and outlook and ethos to their business as well is all about support. So it's down to wanting to train British people to come back into this watchmaking, into this watchmaking profession, wanting to lean towards the recruitment of veterans or ex-forces personnel, just purely out of a respect for what they do as a career. I thought that was fantastic. And the way that they recruit and engage their ambassadors is purely to add support to whatever it is that those guys are doing. So all the way through their podcast, I'm just thinking these guys are just like they're people that are absolute supporters of people doing really good stuff. And that was probably the standout message for me from Nick and Giles, like through everything that they've been through, which is pretty harrowing. Their backstories are pretty harrowing, and you know, from both of their plane crashes and their father, to come out with an outlook of actually I just want to help people do what it is that they want to do.
Yeah.
I think is demonstrative of some pretty incredible individuals.
They want to enjoy themselves as well.
Yeah,
they want to enjoy themselves. They want to be around great people. They don't take fools lightly. They just dismiss any kind of negativity almost, and that's why they choose their ambassadors wisely. That's why they choose their podcast wisely. We crossed over, didn't we?
Yeah,
recorded on the same day.
Yeah.
And it was a real privilege for me, because to get them both in the same room at the same time is almost unheard of, unless it's to, you know, they're at a Bremont event or whatever. But then to get one-on-one almost, you know, I know there's three on mic, but that was apart from episode 7, that was the first and a very different kind of episode. No real direct links to themselves within the military, but that's why I believe what we're trying to do with the podcast, and that's why the military community expands so much more than just blokes in the field getting shot at. Like, it has to include a lot more. It does include a lot more. And for me, technically, that was the first time I'd listened back as a host of a podcast and being like, oh no, like, technically I think I was quite good in that. Like, because it's quite tricky, especially with the two, not dominant characters, but very, two characters, you know, two really, one great speakers, big personalities, and a lot to say, and trying to get things out of them that they'd probably never said to each other before, almost came naturally within that conversation. And they had, and you know, you look at kind of facial expressions and the way one is reacting to another, and almost trying to orchestrate that conversation as well, because it's the same thing, just from a different point of view. And listening back, it was one of my favourites to listen back to. Sometimes when you're in it, it can be like a bit of pressure. You know, you're trying to think of like of what they're obviously saying, and having that at the forefront of your brain. And then in the back end of your brain, you're trying to be like, well, where can I take it to so it's natural? And I really enjoyed listening back. And again, it was because of that support. That underlying narrative, you know, we talk about post-traumatic growth, we talk about trauma, that just does not affect people that's been in the military. And that was a prime example, like a prime example. Like they fucking both should be dead.
Yeah, absolutely. Both they both had a shocker, like an absolute shocker. Like, as in, that is my nightmare. Being in a plane crash is my nightmare. And they've both had it, which is just like unbelievable. Yeah. But you're right, you know, you came across almost professional in that podcast.
Almost.
Yeah, almost. You just sort of started.
It's because they're
yeah, starting to get there.
They're quite posh, aren't they? So my accent changed a lot in it.
Yeah. You sounded like you were from London, mate.
Yeah. I sounded like I was from Godalming in Guildford. I was like, really for now.
It was this bloke.
Yeah. Well, you've got to, aren't you? You've got to adapt to your surroundings, yeah, mate. You should know that.
Damn.
You speak common now. Wise is the worst one for that.
All right.
When he's with me, he speaks like he's from the back streets of Leeds.
When you did pretend you're timid. Yeah, why is he terrible?
You've got to adapt to your surroundings. But I really appreciate these guys and what they do, how they conduct themselves, how they conduct their business as well. Like, we had a few chats away from it about business and about excellence and all the rest of it. Fascinating stuff.
And I think what you're saying about that wider military community is one of my, like, I'm actually quite passionate about that. You and I and Woody, again, Wisey, Si, I've had many conversations about, you know, like, good blokes and, like, what it means to commit and be generous and innovative in these kind of spaces. And I do think that extends beyond just people who had served in the military. Like, I absolutely think the military community includes people that didn't pull on the uniform, but for whatever reason, you know, they're contributing to an overall positive outlook within our community, and I think it's hugely beneficial. And I can certainly think of several examples of people who have pulled on the uniform who are negative influences on our community. We all can do that, but actually, the military should and is supposed to be a representation of the society from which we all came. So therefore, to have to separate the military community from the civilian community, I think is just fundamentally wrong, because we all come from there, and at some point we will have to go back to it. So there should be a much more wider integration of civilian and military and the communities with each other. And obviously, there's slightly different values in each of those communities, but there is a massive amount of crossover.
100%.
Yeah.
You know, we look at not staying in uniform, for example. So we'll go to episode 23, Dave Henson.
Yeah.
And for me, mate, you know, that knowing you a little bit before, becoming good mates with you afterwards, and I often mention it to people, it's that he didn't want to be stuck being that former army officer. And if you look at that day to day in my life or in people's life, and you're just like, don't be stuck somewhere you don't want to be. Like, create positive habits, whether that's swimming or running or whatever it is, and writing, formal qualifications, you know, being around people that are mentors to you, whatever it is. Get yourself out of a situation you don't want to be in. And I think for me, it was real testament to that. Like, real. But the one thing that struck me out of that conversation, were you happy to talk about your experiences on this, and then share it to the thousands?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. So, for me, I find on a personal level that there are too many negative stories, certainly in this, you know, where we are now in late 2019. It seems to be, for whatever reason, a focus on some of the negative sides of the military, and this misunderstanding that you're either going to come out mad, bad, or sad. I mean, it was a figure quoted by Simon Wesley's episode that you go and poll the general public, and 80% think that if you've been in the service, you're going to come out with some sort of mental health condition, or you're going to be broken in some other way. And actually, my experiences in the military, including injury, recovery, rehabilitation, were incredibly positive. Like, 100% positive. Injury is positive. Why was it positive? Because actually, when we were at that time, during combat operations in Afghanistan, there was a high likelihood you were going to come back in a box. You know, so at least through injury, I came home alive, and actually paying the price of a couple of feet, a couple of knees, is a small price to pay when the alternative could have been coming home in a box, as so many of our friends did. So therefore, injury was a positive experience. It was never seen as negative. Yes, there's frustrations and bad points and all this kind of stuff along the way, but that was a positive experience. And all that continued all the way through rehabilitation, recovery. However, I still expect almost the right to move on, like anyone else does in this society. I had a career, it didn't work out for whatever reason, and now it was time to move on. But because of levels of public interest and all this kind of stuff, I kept getting dragged back and dragged back and dragged back, and you sort of what can happen is it ends up tainting your military experience with this negativity, and it ends up defining it by this one particular incident. Like, the rest of my tour of Afghanistan was mega interesting. I got loads of stuff done. Met some really interesting people from loads of different nationalities, all this kind of stuff. But there was a focus on one split second, and I didn't really like that. So actually being able to share everything that's happened post injury was a real key thing for me, and a real way to be positive and future driven about my life.
Mm. These stories, like, I use yours quite a lot. Some of the conversations we've had since, I pass on to other people, like whether it's about traumatic brain injury or about a view on death as well, like, and our views on that. You know, when we was in like the car going to somebody Hammersmith or whatever it was, and was chatting about that with my own experiences at the moment, and to have people around you that you trust, like, I look at you as like, not to blow smoke, because this will be the last time in this one where I blow smoke at your ass, but I look at you like a role model, almost like someone to lean on. Sometimes you get pissed off, can I call you and ask for your advice, right? I know you do, because you're doing some kind of like Tony Stark thing in the lab. That's what I think of you doing. But I do look at you as a role model, because the way you conduct yourself and the way that you and not just kind of developing because of the sake of development, not just, you're not showing off about it, but you want to make things better for other people. And there's a lot that are doing that. The Kazivak Club and then individuals within that are really are kind of striving. Are you proud of what, I know it's in its infancy, but are you proud of what you lot are doing?
Yeah, I do. Thanks. That's just nice bit of smoke there. I do, and I am proud of the Kazivak Club. I'm proud of what we do on an individual level, and I'm proud of how we conduct ourselves as a group, and I'm proud of what we stand for as a group. And there's been many times, like, where either me or YZ have sort of had an idea or a suggestion of something that we think is good, and the multitude of opinions and experiences within the club itself will come back and help you see that that's not always, you know, it's not gospel according to Wisey and Henson. It's people contributing in and wanting to grow this organisation themselves. Like, that's probably the bit which I'm most proud of, is that we've, you know, Wisey and I set it up and provided the foundations and a little bit of loose framework and perhaps a little bit of early leadership. But what's going on with the club now is that members are coming in and saying, I want to do this, I want to do this, can we do this, can we have any input or influence here, and here? And actually it's being driven from the bottom up, which is exactly how you want sort of an innovative and forward-leaning organisation to be. So the guys are coming forward and saying, this is what we think we should do, and then we'll just go and facilitate it, which is exactly where we want it to be. So it's gone from being just an idea that we had to being an idea that everyone can start to grab hold of and push forward. So you're mega proud of the club. I think it's like all we aim to be is a force for good in this sort of pretty strange world that we live in at the minute, and I think the guys are absolutely living up to it.
The last night I was on the phone with my mate who has been on this podcast, and I was asking him some questions about some things, and he was like, oh, like, I don't know, like, just a bit confused with a few bits and pieces. And then I thought about the Kazivak Club, because I knew I'd seen you today, and I was like, do you feel like that you're supporting each other? So if one person doesn't know about X, Y, and Z, whether that's some funding or whether that's some NHS support or whether that's a project that's really, you know, a sports project or whatever it is, do you find that you're giving each other advice away from just the meetings, the yearly meetings or whatever it is?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you don't have a phone number, you can bang on the Facebook page, and there's usually guys with enough of an opinion that they'll come back and answer it. So yeah, absolutely. I think there's a sharing of best practice, a sharing of knowledge, or a sharing of just of this is what worked for me. If you want, I'll come and help you out, and we can try it.
Is it victim mentality in the club?
No, absolutely not. And I, you know, the guys that are eligible to come into this, become members of the club, at one point in time, were all in the same boat as me, as I described earlier. So they were all in the position whereby they were gifted a ticket back to the UK. So they were gifted that escape from the box and a trip home through the nature of their injuries. So, you know, it sounds bad in terms of considering it in the way that, you know, I got a freaking golden ticket out of Afghanistan. Like, at least at that point in time, I knew I was going home. And it's the same for, you know, the rest of the guys, whether that was, whether they served in Iraq or Afghanistan. When they were serving their country in combat operations overseas, they were gifted their own golden ticket back home. And it does genuinely present you with, by and large, a positive outlook on life, because whether it takes time or whether it's instantly, you come to that understanding that actually I could have come back in a box and I could have been in the ground. And it does present you with this very positive outlook on life. That being said, when we come together as members, actually, because everyone's been in such similar circumstances, we don't have to talk about injury. We don't have to talk about the struggles of day-to-day life. There's a normalization factor that happens by having a whole load of military cripples in one room. You know, it's interesting, and we can just sort of we can tell our shit stories and shit experiences as much as we want. But at no point is it, you know, is anyone going to step back and be like, oh, I feel so sorry for you having lost a leg, because actually you've either lost one or the guy sat next to you has lost one anyway. So there's no space for a victim mentality in that kind of environment. There's no appetite for it, because you've all had the same experiences. And actually the way that which the club is structured in terms of our aims and objectives and a focus on being that force for good, we go out and we raise money for charity. And by its very nature, you cannot be a victim if you're helping someone else. You can't do it. Right now, we've got guys just on the descent phase from Mont Blanc who've gone up and have raised nearly $5,000 for Great Ormond Street Hospital. Like, it's mega. There's no space for victimhood.
Who are they? Assembled to Summit?
Yeah, Assembled to Summit are the guys. So we've got Justin Davies, Stephen Hanley and Harry Buddha-McGar alongside a team from HST Adventures have just cracked the summit of Mont Blanc, obviously Western Europe's highest mountain, so the on the roof of Western Europe. And none of these guys have got any feet. They're all bilateral amputees, and they've just absolutely nailed it. They've gone up in, I think it's like 2.5 days or something. Just absolutely cracked it from bottom to top. Yeah, not even that much cuffing either. I think they genuinely had a professional approach to it as well, which is surprising. You know, most of the stuff we do is just pure cuff. But yeah, like, exceptional attitude. They just wanted to go and do it. We're pushing boundaries.
The the one thing I found, and it seems normal to me, with a few guys the other week when we were together in Sheffield, and I was with JJ last week, and is the openness to discuss an injury. So, like, one of the lads who was with in Sheffield, he was there doing some cycling stuff. It was not even to do with the Invictus Trials at all. It was his own stuff he was doing. He just happened to be in Sheffield at the same time. And he was a below-knee amputee. And I was like, but to have the conversation, like, where is it? How far is it down? Like, how much lever have you got on it? And just like a normal conversation, because I was interested in how he cycled. And are you finding that people are happy to have conversations with you? And I don't want to keep it onto the prosthetics, but do you find, like, people will approach, or, like, are we normalising it?
Yeah, I think so. I'd have to guess at this stage, but I would imagine that probably 20 years ago, you are much more of, like, a curiosity factor, you know, almost like the old freak days, because you wouldn't see people walking around with prosthetics. So if you did have a prosthetic, it was almost always covered up. Whereas then, alongside the Paralympics, you had a whole load of military guys that come through. So suddenly the number of active, young and active amputees in this country has gone up, and we're starting to achieve stuff. And it's not, you know, like, it's not necessarily seen it in terms of disability anymore, but much more in terms of like a technological interest. And yeah, you do get questions like, how do they work? How do they function? And how far up do they go? What do they feel? Like the favorite kids question, I think, is how do they stick onto your legs? And they're just interested. There's an interest level there. So yeah, I think people are open to coming up and talk. It doesn't mean I always welcome people coming up to talk, because I'm just trying to go about my day-to-day business, and I'm as grumpy as the next person, but I just don't have a way of sort of dodging out of a conversation. Like, I used to get it on the running track was the worst bit. I'd be sort of training, and I'd take my legs off for a little training break, and then someone would come talk to you, and they'd just talk at you because you're sat on the floor with no legs. You can't go anywhere, so you either have to be like a mega rude, but like, fuck off, I don't want to talk to you, or just sit there and take it.
Close your eyes, put your fingers on the top of your nose. Just like,
One of my mates called it the cripple tax. So he's like, when he's outside, when his girlfriend's off shopping and he's outside with all the other blokes on the seats, like any other bloke can just sit there and play on the phone and not be spoken to. But as a cripple, like, guarantee 100% someone's going to come up and chat to you about some nonsense around. You're just this grumpy, you're probably hungover, don't want to talk to anyone. That's the cripple
shit chance. Magnet.
Absolute shit magnet, come on. But I get it in pubs, like, people come and talk to me about their problems. I had a guy, like a real nice guy, bought me a beer and then proceeded to talk to me about his urine dysfunction. Just like, mate, just come to the bar. Leave me alone.
Yeah, so to come out of this, just do not approach Dave Ensign. Don't ask him anything. He's quite friendly, actually.
Yeah, I'm all right.
Yeah. just don't approach him in the pub or on the track. Yeah. Don't do it. Episode 24, Alex Crick.
Yes. Alex is a legend. So I've got some time booked in with Alex in September of this year. I get some revision surgery done on my right leg. So this is 8.5 years post-injury. There's still problems. I've got some sort of skin tissue breakdown. I've still got a kneecap in that leg, which has caused me problems now. I need to get my skin graft removed and have the normal good skin pushed back over. So the skin graft has got no fat underneath it, and it breaks down. Breaks down quite easily. The properties of skin graft skin are very different to normal good skin. So I'm in with Alex in September to get some work done on my leg. Alex's podcast was exceptional, and I think that's a reflection of Alex as a person. She, you know, like so many guys, girls you have on this podcast, is someone that just wants to help, that is absolutely supportive of trying to get people to the best possible state that they can be. So her sort of mission when it comes to doing these revision surgeries for the guys is to absolutely take them from one place and provide them with the best possible solution that they can have for going on in life. And I think that came across in absolute spades in her podcast. But I think when you add in, when you combine Alex's Surgical Peace podcast with perhaps mine as just an example of a wounded soldier and sort of the customer, as it were, and you add in Emily Mayhew's podcast as well, which we'll talk more about, I'm sure. It really serves to highlight one thing which I'm really keen on talking to everyone about, which is the long-term nature of these kind of injuries, the long-term nature of coming out the back end of conflict. And that doesn't matter whether that's a brain injury, a psychological injury, or something that's happened to your musculoskeletal system. There is long-term associated with it. So just because me and all of my peer group that came out of Headley Court, we came out with a sort of tick in the box which said rehabilitated. Like, I don't believe there's any such word as rehabilitated. You when you're in this kind of state, again, physically or psychologically, there is always a requirement for onward care, onward rehabilitation, onward surgery. Like, repeat. It doesn't go away. If you don't work at it, your ability to do stuff goes away. I can feel it, you know, after maybe just 2 weeks of not being in the gym, I can notice how much harder it is for me to walk my daughter to preschool. And that is, it's a half mile walk. It's not a massive physical challenge, but I notice the difference between like my optimum operating state and my suboptimum, I've just been on the piss for 2 weeks type state, which you get at the back of a holiday. The Butlins or whatever. Yeah, yeah. There's a standard Butlins.
By yourself.
Yeah, by myself. Butlins for 2 weeks, come back. Shit state. But I think that was, you add those three podcasts together and they're such good examples of the long-term problems, but also long-term solutions. So Alex coming in, constantly just topping up and making sure that we're in the best physical state. Emily, in her example of the guinea pig cub, making sure that basically the guys which inspire me and are my role models and push me to be the best person that I can be are together in one place. So actually, you do keep up this overall positive attitude and this overall position whereby growth and development is possible. So yeah, that's the thing which struck me from Alex is that there is just a through life requirement for these conditions.
Sai Harma put us in touch with me and Alex, and she was so, I mean, her time is financially very expensive.
Yeah,
she took the day off to come up to London. We recorded, whatever it was. I spent about an hour and a half with her, 2 hours with her, and. In the podcast, some people messaged me saying, oh, I enjoy it, but she sounded quite cold.
Yeah.
Right? Then this is the difference when people are not in you can't see what we record.
Yeah.
She's smiling all the way through. She gets emotional towards the end. She's such a lovely person. Like, I think, and then I was speaking to Mickey Yule a few weeks before that and mentioned that she was coming on, and it's almost like people are in love with her.
Yeah. Like yeah, people... I expect they are.
Yeah, no, they probably are. Yeah, 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 yeah. She's like, we was in an all by one before, and I said, "Oh, you're like a national asset," and she was like, "Don't say that."
We can say it. She is a national asset. Yeah, absolute national asset. And I think some of the guys, because of the level of care that she provides. So she doesn't only provide the expertise, but the intricate details of one of her patients' care that comes through her military clinic, as in she does their dressing change. She makes sure that there's no infection. She doesn't delegate that to nurses. That is her responsibility, which she's taken on herself. And I have to do it, but she wants to make sure that the outcome is absolutely the best. And she is 100% a national asset.
Episode 25, Emily Mayhew. You work really closely with Emily. She was an absolute joy. She can speak. That's a good thing when the content is so rich. What's her relationship with the Cardiovac Club?
So Emily is we call her our consigliere, which I'm going to let you into a secret. I've never seen the Godfather films. Never seen any single one of them.
Yeah.
But apparently the consigliere is someone from the Godfather, which advises whoever the Godfather is. I've got no idea, having never seen the films.
Yeah.
But she has come on board as an all-round advisor. And she comes from a position of expertise. She knows the history of clubs like this. She knows the history of traumatic injury. But also she's a very good sounding board, so she speaks an awful lot, and an awful lot of what she speaks is makes sense, which is useful. So we can ask her opinion on it, on anything ranging from psychedelics to ties, and she'll provide a genuinely useful and insightful opinion on it. So back when Wisey and I were first having conversations about wanting to set up some sort of formal way of keeping these guys that we idolise together, we brought Emily in for some historical context initially, and actually she's provided us with advice and guidance all the way through, and I certainly feel very fortunate to have her around, because she's someone that just has an innate ability to get stuff done. And I think she just talks at people until they.
Does she?
At people until they say yes to whatever it is that she wants. She's great. I think in your episode, it's probably the least amount I've ever heard you talking. Yeah. I don't even know if you were there. You probably just left the room. Just get on with it.
We did Simon Wes at the same time. He was before, and then Emily was after. And I said, "Oh, Emily's coming on," and he was like, "Oh yeah, she's brilliant. She's awesome." And he missed his next appointment because he just stayed in the room next door and listened to her. I think it was Si Hammer that put us in touch as well. It's been a good. It's like my producer Si. But I think initially was like this is it, and then I think you and then Wise have almost like backed that up and gone this is the right way. Because I think I can't remember who it was. They said, well, you're never going to get a Kazivac Club special. We're never going to do anything like that. So the nearest you're going to get is Emily.
Yeah.
So that was it was such a fascinating hour. And then we saw her again, like when we was in Sheffield in the hotel the other week, she came down in her PJs. It was great to see.
Yeah.
It was like midnight or whatever, and she came down and
she
had a glass of water, and it was a joy to see her. Anything else?
I think the other thing which I've written down as a particular point from her podcast was again bringing out the word support. So just as we spoke about the Braymont brothers being so supportive all the way through their entire lives and sort of what they live for Emily's, I wrote down the word support because it highlights the requirement, I think, for people that have gone through the brotherhood, for want of a better word, of military service, and come out the other side. Like, you know, you don't go into these kind of environments with these people without forming you know, almost this need to be with like-minded people with some sort of regularity. And I don't think I've explained that very well, but essentially you become a little bit more tribal. I think you come from civilian street, go into the military, deploy, become tribal, come out, and you need to get tribal again. You need that. Like, I think once you have had some exposure to that sort of tribal system, and I think you can get it in sports teams and things like that, but once you've had exposure to that kind of tribal system, I think it's important that it stays there with you through life. And that's what I sort of took from Emily's, like, was the indicator that through the Guinea Pig Club, and, you know, these guys had 70-odd years together as a club, they had that support and they had that tribal outlook all the way through. So that was another key take-home message from Emily's podcast. If if you're perhaps not in the best state mentally, and you haven't got a bit of a tribal system around you, then perhaps that's the first thing to go and do, is go and seek support from your brothers, basically.
Yeah, when I it's totally different, but I can kind of relate to it. When I left the military, straight away my missus was like, go join a rugby club. I was like, just go do it straight away. And that's straight away I did. And like, two of my best mates now are from that team. And then the fire service came after that. And again, I got that sense. And now sometimes I feel like I'm missing a little bit of that.
Yeah.
But then, you know, this podcast has brought a collective together as well, which I feel like I'm, for me personally, feeling like I'm like just a small part in a bigger puzzle. The one thing about the Emily's, and it was when you were speaking then, when you said about they were there together for 70 years, and she mentions the fact that boring is good when you're talking about boring stuff, and you've won. And it's almost like when charities cease to be. I was chatting to the chief Royal Engineer the other week, and he was like, he mentioned about Royal Engineers.
Yeah.
He said, oh, if you ever hear anyone, I know you and your brother was in, if you ever hear anyone that's struggling or needs some support, like, contact me and I'll do whatever I can. So I said, like, to be honest, like, I don't really see any Royal Engineers that really struggle. I think it's like a personality trait or whatever it is. Like, they generally do all right. But like, I'll let you know anyway. Oh, yeah, we set a charity up actually to support former Royal Engineers, and we had to close it because no one was coming. And I was like that's a massive success.
Yeah.
It's a success. Like, boring is good.
Yeah.
Like, closing charities is good.
Yeah.
Means like we've done it. Achieved like perfect. That's a great way of going about it, and I just liked it. Yeah, boring is good. What wasn't boring? Episode 26, Dennis Brock. We split it into five parts, really, because I billed that as it was Mental Health Week, so I did one a day. But the reality was the file was too big, so I couldn't put it out as a one.
The computer says no.
So I was like, oh, well, how can we? All right, it's Mental Health Awareness. No, what it went, it was the build up to the podcast award.
Yeah,
that was it.
That
so I was like,
it.
I'm going to release one. It's called blagging.
Trying to bribe the judges.
Dennis is, so Kate Thompson, who was an author, who introduced us to Mari Butwell in the previous kind of set of 10, introduced us to Dennis. He was like, whatever, 101 or 102. Like, I went and we recorded in near Sunbury in West London. And it was in like this like industrial hangar, but we had to walk over this bridge over the Thames onto this like industrial estate and go into this like, it wasn't like this.
Yeah.
It's all nice. That it was just like, it was a great little studio, but it was thingy. And then he just was like, didn't know what a podcast was.
Yeah.
Let's just go. Let's just run with it. And we just went yeah. through. And for me, like I know yourself, like his outlook on life, how the fuck can you go from being nearly starved to death in Libya? He was smiling all the way through it. How can you go from that to then spending years and then Dresden? When I mentioned, was Dresden a war crime? He was like, nah, it was all right. It was just a bit of bombing. And I don't think he was being like funny about it. I just think his outlook on life is totally different to anyone I've ever met.
Yeah.
What was your...
100% that. So I've as we sit here recording, so I've got my little notebook in front of me, which I made my notes myself away from speaking to you. So I've come in and under Outlook, I've got amongst others Dennis Brock. So it's like my key takeaway message from Dennis's podcast. The stories are just phenomenal. I love hearing stories from different areas of military service, and his was exceptional. You know, he sort of got the whole range of military experiences that you could possibly have. We're all in there, but it was exactly as you said. It's his outlook. He's 100% positive, and you know, he justifies it. He talks about his outlook on life, and he talks about his positive attitude in part 5 of the 5-part series. And his reasoning for having such a positive outlook was, you know, he had that conversation with his mate, didn't he? And it was basically like, you know, life is never going to be that shit again. Yeah. So actually, maybe I'm in Sunbury as a civil servant. This is fucking mega. Like, I've got food. Happy days, done.
Yeah.
Like, my heating works occasionally. Yeah. Done, sorted.
But, I'm ringing bells once a day at the local
absolutely.
Church.
Absolutely. He had a special word for it as well. I can't remember what the word for a bell ringer was.
Oh, I can't remember.
Yeah, it was a special word for it, didn't he? But yeah, and you get it. And actually, I think if more people could genuinely go and experience hardship, like legit hardship, it makes the rest of your life easier. Like, I never really get bothered by the cold anymore because, like, and you will have experienced it. There is an exercise or an operating environment you've been in where you have been colder at some point, whether that's in Wales or in Canada or whatever. Like, you will have been colder at some point than you ever will have been in your civilian day to life. So actually, I'm all good. I'm happy. I'm fine. Mm. And I do think those elements of military service sort of don't get highlighted enough. You're being exposed regularly to arduous conditions, whether that's a lack of sleep or extreme temperatures, are generally quite good at giving you a solid temperament for dealing with life.
I think, and I've mentioned this, I can't remember if I've mentioned it on here before or not, but I think short-term suffering is good.
Yeah, 100%.
Whether that's getting up early to go to the gym or, you know, a cold shower or just being, or just accepting the fact that something's a bit shit.
Yeah.
But in an hour,
yeah,
it'll be all right.
Fine.
Yeah. It'll be all right.
They call it embracing the suck or something like that. Just embrace it. It sucks.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do about it. It sucks. Take it in, suck it up, and it'll get better. It's going to be fine. But it does give you that barometer. Like, you can always refer back to that particular point and be like, I've been colder.
Yeah. Or subconsciously.
Yeah.
You just, the ability to take something else, just the ability, the robustness of it.
Yeah.
And at different times in our life, we'll feel really robust and then we'll drop off a little bit and then it's time to get back on it again, whether that's physically or mental, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, cold water is a perfect example for me. Like, if you don't take a cold shower for 6 months and then have a cold shower, it's not very nice, especially in December. But if you have cold showers every single day,
yeah,
it's fine.
Yeah.
Just a little bit of suffering, bit of perspective, nothing bad's going to happen.
Yeah.
Boom. And even when it does, you've got an ability to deal with the stress a little bit harder. And I think Dennis was primed.
Absolutely.
Episode 27, Simon Wesley.
Fascinating. Mm. Fascinating episode. What have I got down here as keynotes from Simon's? Perception. We've talked about the UK Invictus trials in Sheffield. We've mentioned it. That's why we were in Sheffield. Simon was speaking at a symposium that I was also speaking at. And one thing he mentioned both at that symposium and in his podcast was the perception of the armed forces as a toxic occupation. So this is from an external view of the armed forces, and we briefly mentioned it earlier. So this is the public misperception that you go into the armed forces and you're going to come out broken, probably with psychological problems. And I think a lot of that stems from your classic Vietnam movies, you know, where basically anyone that went to Vietnam came back and they had severe mental health problems. So I think that kind of viewpoint has been carried across, and certainly with the focus on the likes of PTSD, mental health awareness, all this kind of stuff, I think people are much more cognizant of the fact that mental health problems exist, and the military can lead to the development of mental health problems. The key thing about Simon's podcast was actually him debunking these conceptions and you know, demonstrating the simple facts that actually if you come out of the military, you're much less likely to develop a criminal record, albeit that if you do develop a criminal record, it's more likely that it's going to be a violent one. And actually, I don't think as a subgroup of the population, we're any more likely to develop signs, symptoms of post-traumatic stress than any other member of the population. I think the only exception was between reservists and regular forces. And even then, that even in itself leads to an interesting point or an interesting follow-on, which we've already spoken at, which is the issue of support. So the conclusions from the work that Simon and his colleagues at King's College have done, the conclusions when they found this difference between reservists and regular troops, whether soldiers, sailors or airmen, was all down to support. So when you come back as a member of a regular unit, you know, Simon was saying your CO will put on barbecues and family days, and there's this and this, and you're back into PT, you're back into doing your troop rugby, whatever it might be. There's an environment which is entirely built around support post-conflict is absolutely there. But as a reservist, I think actually things might have changed, and I think the integration continues on a little bit longer post-tour. But you, as a reservist, you came back from these people that you deployed with for all this time, and that's it. You're back to your day job as a banker or a map maker or whatever it might be. You're straight back into it, and you're the level of support that is provided to you by virtue of working with the people that you deployed with is not there. So those, like the whole episode of Simon's, you know, from the understanding of shell shock not being the same as post-traumatic stress and the experiences of our troops from World War One through World War Two, so the history of military mental health was fascinating. But in terms of messaging, perception and support were two key ones. And I've also put Simon down as a bit of an innovator, so willing to make innovations in this mental health space. So yeah, innovator, perception, as in educating the public on the perception of armed forces and the requirement for support to armed forces personnel come back from conflict.
I mean, I could speak a lot about still. I'm not going to speak a lot about it, but I think one thing, I can't remember if it was during it or a conversation I've had with him away from it, where is the relationship between your mental health as a child or certainly your upbringing and how that impacts your adult life. I think there's a lot going on. Excuse me, mate. There's a lot going on with King that they're focusing on that quite a lot as well. And but just some bare bones understanding of some issues that is exactly what I personally wanted from it, and I know that again, his time is very precious. Like, yeah. He's a top, top psychiatrist. And for him to come on and to be so open and just let's go, whatever.
Yeah.
It's fantastic for us. Episode 28, Mandy Islam. Just again, like an outlook. You know, like when people like really inspire. And I think this episode has the opportunity, if it's used right in the right areas, to really inspire and motivate a lot of people that are going through something very similar. And I can't comprehend what she's going through, and she's doing very well at the moment, like really, really well. But it was just that, just her outlook. I really respect her a lot for coming out. And she didn't know, so like, she'd never listened to one of our episodes before she came in.
Yeah.
So she sat there.
Yeah.
For the purposes of audio, I'm pointing.
Yeah.
Right, she sat there, I sat here, and she was like, oh, could you ask me this? I said, no, it's a conversation. Like, we're just going to take it through. She's like, all right. I was like, and then it was one of the episodes as well where you're like, my voice is fucking shit. Like, her voice is so nice.
Yeah.
I'm just like a Shrek in the corner.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah.
you are not wrong. Then.
But yeah, just major. And then also, like, I could understand a little bit, like, my mum at the moment's going through kind of terminal cancer, like the back end of it and the effects of it. And when she was explaining about the burning and, you know, just some of the symptoms and some of the problems, and it gave me a much more well-rounded view of what people go through when they're dealing with these diseases or illnesses, whatever you want to call them. And from there, I'm just going to have to move us to, and I'm just going to overview, like, because we're running out of time. Episode 29, Dean Stott, like, for me, it was an example of, like, just dogged determination. There's always striving for excellence and what and target setting at a, like, a high level, but not worried about failing that target. Like, £1 million or nearly £1 million raised for the Royal Foundation for Heads Together is not to be scoffed at.
Yeah.
I mean, it's quite an amazing feat, and to put his body through what he did just on that fundraising event and the stuff that he's doing in the next kind of year as well, is truly kind of admirable and a real role model episode for me, as was episode 30, Wendy Sell. Just an ordinary woman about to do some extraordinary stuff, and she has, and the way that the planning behind it, the way that she, her time management must be awesome.
Yeah.
I'll say these women, but these women,
yeah,
who can just juggle everything.
It's so admirable and so beyond my own capabilities, that yes, that ability to juggle. Yeah. And I don't know if it comes from sort of motherhood or whatever, but she was astonishing in terms of what she has done and is doing. And I think it really sort of, the bit which it highlighted for me was just how important, you know, there is a wife at home. You know, there's this entire other side of military life which will often get overlooked, you know, through nature of deployments or whatever it might be. And there are, within that other life, are goals, aims, ambitions, objectives, fulfillment that needs to be achieved. She just nailed it.
Mm.
Absolutely nailed it.
Episode 31, Dave Rigg, Military Cross. So Dave, when I spoke to him initially, he was like, are you sure you'll want this on the podcast? I was like, mate, I definitely want this on the podcast. And this is a story, like, from the outside or from the outlook, like, you, not the outlook, from just the perception of that. And then we had a conversation before we went kind of recording, and it was very much like, I mean, it's an amazing story. It's an amazing story. Probably the most amazing, as in, like, fucking hell, I want to join back up again.
Yeah.
From all these conflicts that we've done recently, like, it's right up there. All the elements to it.
Yeah.
And he he just says, like, this is what was happening on the ground. When we were recording, it's in there. Like I said in there, like, the reality is someone died.
Yeah.
And they were putting themselves into a situation where all of them could have been killed. And it wasn't pleasant, although now, you know, listening back, it's fucking unreal. But the, you know, seeing him, his shoulders drop or his facial expressions change when he's reliving it. And you know what it's like, two on mic in a studio where there's nothing else, there's no other distraction going on, can really change a lot, can evoke a lot of emotion. You can start picturing things in your head. And for me, that wasn't just a great story, but it was actually watching someone go through emotion.
Yeah.
It tells it in quite like, I'm in a pub chatting to my mate, especially towards the end. If you re-listened, you can hear some emotion and his face. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
Episode 32, Saif Omari. We've got to be quick with this one, but because I want to get onto the two specials that we've done. But Saif, I went through a guy, because this is one of the stories I really wanted to cover. Like everything, they're all pieced together for a reason.
Yeah.
Like it's not just a lot of stories thrown into a bucket and then pulled out a reason. And what I wanted to get from this was like, this guy sacrificed for his country, yeah? Hard working as a kid, always like just wanted to progress and achieve. Sacrificed for the British military and managed to get over here, almost smuggled over here, yet just received refugee status and not even got his card. And his kids are still over in Afghanistan. His wife was killed and he has no idea how she died. No one will tell him why. And it was like, we have a refugee crisis, but it's a fucking crisis for the refugees.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. Yeah, people 100%. Like, there's been, over the last few years, there's been such a poisonous language being used to describe the refugee situation. You are absolutely dead right with that. It is horrific to be a refugee. Not many people want or choose to be that refugee. They want to be in Afghanistan, in Libya, in Syria. That's where their home is, that's where their family is, that's where their entire life is. I don't think I really want to come over here.
No. My mate's from Syria.
Yeah.
And he's a dentist over here. Great bloke. And he said Damascus was the safest city in the world. And we went skiing just as the Syria stuff was happening. And he was like, I just fucking can't believe it. Like, yeah. It was, you could just walk from one end of the city to the other, no problem.
Yeah.
And now a lot of people he knows are refugees, but highly skilled, highly dedicated. They don't want to be, most people don't want to be here.
Yeah.
But if I was in their situation, mate, I would come here.
Yeah.
Or I would go to Germany.
Yeah. Go wherever.
Where I'm going to be safe. And I'd be able to
shooting at you.
Yeah. But not just that. Like, where can I go make a life?
Yeah.
And that's, again, it's credit to our country. It's a credit to Germany. It's a credit to all, I don't want to get too political.
Yeah.
But we've got something amazing. And from my personal opinion, I'm like, people like Saif Omari want to be here and want to bring their family and want to help.
They'll be a credit to this country. Already have been.
Yeah, exactly. MOD special with Glenn Horton. Glenn contacted me initially. And then he's been invited onto different podcasts. He obviously understood that the collective of this one, maybe, you know, we are creating something, I believe. And I was really privileged and honoured to sit down with him and chat through a lot of his stuff. And you said something, actually. Go on, you go with Glenn.
So Glenn's podcast is mega interesting from many different aspects. We've spoken about role models already. I absolutely think Glenn is a role model. The way that he analyzes, interprets, explains is inspiring. And I know that as one of his cadets post Sandhurst, during Sandhurst, sorry, I've known him for a fair amount of time now. Glenn is an innovator. So he completes my list of innovators. He is someone that sees a problem, identifies a solution, and works his ass off to go and deliver that solution, whereas other people might be put off by systems or words like it can't be done or that's not how we do it. So, for example, his creation of two posts of the British Army Sergeant Major and for the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Joint Chiefs of Staff Committee, I think is the official title of the SEAC post. Mm-hmm. He has created these so that the enlisted soldier's voice is heard at the very highest levels across defence, whether that's in the army or the Ministry of Defence as a whole. There's his understanding of the problem, his identification of a solution, and the implementation of that solution itself. And I know for a fact it riles people up the wrong way. There's sort of notes about people thinking he's cheated the system or he's creating these positions where they shouldn't be created and all this kind of stuff. But he has seen a problem and not recognised the predetermined arcs or boundaries and has gone and delivered a solution to that problem. Mm. Therefore, he is an innovator. His understanding of, therefore, of all of the senior levels of the MOD, policy, all this kind of stuff, absolutely top notch, and he therefore gets to share this soldier's opinion at these very highest levels. So I think that kind of stuff is incredible, but yeah, he gets an awful lot of stick, and I just don't really understand why.
Things take time. Like it's like people are impatient. It's also like we said, this victim mentality is creeping in.
It's a collective mentality. So, for example, like when you post something on Twitter, this is particularly when he was the Army Sergeant Major, you post something on Twitter, 50% of the responses are based on dress code. Like in my day, dress code was like this. In my day, dress code was like this. And
it's boring, isn't it?
It's so boring. I don't understand.
He's a role model. Well, a lot of time for him.
Yeah.
And not everyone gets to spend any time with him on a level, because people look at him as this thing that's not attainable to go and speak to or whatever. But I tell you now, the guy is unreal. Like, yeah. I have a lot of time, and he carries a lot of weight as well. And I was so happy that other people can listen to who he is. And I'll tell you what, another one is the Westminster Special with Johnny Mercer, the same thing.
Yeah.
Tell you what, I was just like, I like the real deal.
Yeah, 100%. Another one that gets a whole load of stick. And like the reality is, agree or don't or disagree with his politics, doesn't matter. The guy identified a problem, found a solution, and gone off and delivered on that solution. Yeah. He's a doer. Someone that's absolutely, like, wears his heart on his sleeve, I'll just go and do it.
Mm.
Happy days. Like a real role model. And you can be a role model and not agree with someone's politics, however much.
Yeah, I don't agree with his politics.
it's irrelevant. Like how he's conducting himself, how he goes about his business, how he approaches solving a problem, his ideas and understanding of standards, of values, of honour, discipline, like absolutely shine through.
Mm.
So yeah, two cracking specials you had there. Yeah. Really good specials. Like
the Johnny one as well is the OCD stuff.
Yeah.
Like I just thought it was like people putting iron's bean tins to the front or like tidying up. So I did this episode and then I was in Hull in a hotel.
Yeah.
And I was eating food or whatever. I was on the laptop and there was this couple next to me, or two couples next to me, and one of them was going, "Oh, you've got OCD, aren't you? You like things neat and tidy." And he was going, "Oh yeah, I've got OCD." Yeah. I was like, OCD is when you sleep 3 hours a night in 15 years.
Freaking disability. It's not arranging your phone like this on the table.
I thought it was like, that's what I thought. And that really, again, that opened my eyes. Just that side. And when we was in, so I've got a good relationship with Johnny.
Yeah.
But when we were in, that first 10 minutes, although he was totally open, he was doodling. He didn't really give me too much eye contact. And then I had to kind of very subtly kind of break it down to understand, because I really wanted to understand what OCD was.
Yeah.
Just to make it, like you say, if we're declassifying stigmas, if we're changing the conversation, like that was important.
Yeah.
To what was it, like the fifth most debilitating?
I don't know.
Something like that.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that? 3 hours sleep a night because you can't stop switching the light on and off.
But anyway, yeah. And you know, he's just gone into his new position. I wish him all the very best with it. And it's going to take time.
Yeah.
It's going to take time for him to do it. But we'll see what happens. So we'll just do the thank yous, because there's obviously so many more people behind this, and there's so many kind of inspirational projects and other bits and pieces that are going on. Obviously, Des Fraser, you know, certainly one of my best mates, worked with him for a long time, and he really is the backbone behind this podcast. Works his backside off to enable me to do it. Obviously, Beth, doing what she does, you know, she went up to Sheffield with us, which are some of the future podcasts that we're going to release, but she works on this project and really wants to produce the best we can possibly produce. SNK Studios down at Tottenham Court Road. You can get them at snkstudios.co.uk, and obviously I'm not sponsored or anything like that, but it's by far the best recording studio that we've come across in London. And if you're looking at doing your own podcast, then I would use them as an example, as a kind of a base for sound quality and the kind of production of it all. And then another great little studio that we came across in Sheffield is Rebel Base Media, so thank you so much for that. Other people, Nath Jones, as always, kind of supports, and he's helped us in the future with the Sheffield stuff, as did Fred Hargreaves. Woody, Sean Jones, Jordan, Richard, James, Paul, for their continual support. Kind of our mini producers as well, who put us in touch with people. Si Harmer and Wisey, as always. Kate Thompson put us in touch with Dennis, and Kate's new book is out, Secrets of the Homefront Girls. Absolutely fantastic book there. Sylvana, we kind of met on social media. She has a big commute, and she transcribes a lot of the podcasts for those that are hard of hearing. And it's opened up a new kind of demographic for us there. And I'm still kind of toing and froing exactly how to use those transcriptions to best fit. But they'll be coming out on the website soon. I'd like to thank Carla from the Poppy Practice. So Poppy Practice is a great little project helping guys get into therapy really, really quickly in their local areas. They've helped two of my close friends, and another is just going or about to go through that process as well. Really kind of agile, real quick, and really, really effective. Just Johnny Ball, just say his stuff with Campaign Force is going ahead, and it's going really strong, getting more veterans and reservists into politics. I'd like to thank Matty Edwards and Matty O'Shea for keeping the conversation going with Des. Brian Wood's new film's coming out next year. Jordan Wiley's always doing something dangerous, and now he's doing Rowing Dangerously. That project's about to kind of land in the next couple of months. Thanks to Naomi from Endeavour Fund. We're going to do some work with them in the future. And as always, Mission Motorsport and Team Rubicon, if you're looking at, you know, finding meaning and purpose with Team Rubicon, if you want an example of how to put people into employment and looking at our kind of community as a national asset, Mission Motorsport do it better than most. If you can't get enough of this, you've got the Forces Friendly podcast as well, where we kind of link in business and the military. Bremont, again, thanks for Nick and Giles for coming on. Their Invictus bracelet, it's about £35. Their aim is to raise £10,000 for Invictus. And they're a huge supporter to people like NIMS, who are part of the military community, with their Project Possible. And if you look at Expedition 5, they're some of their ambassadors as well. They're doing amazing stuff. And actually, one of those guys from Expedition 5 saved the life of a future guest. So, certainly look at what they're doing. TMX Clothing Supplies.co.uk. Check those guys out. So, Ian... does caps and t-shirts for us, and it does them at the lowest possible price. Again, we're not sponsored by them, but if you use DClass20 as a promotional code and click free postage, you get it very, very cheap. And then finally, thanks to James and Dave for supporting us. You know, it costs quite a lot of money to do this stuff, and we've been, myself and Des and the rest of the team have been financing it from day one, and Beth's input as well, to make it happen. But it is expensive. And James, my good mate of mine, James, he's from Sheffield, was Power Reg, and then French Foreign Legion. He's jumped in and kind of supporting us financially, especially for these episodes and certainly the next 10. There we are. Thank you, everyone, for listening and engaging on social media. And we just are very grateful to have this platform and to get it out there. Thank you so much, and we will leave it there.